Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, good evening. Hello and welcome to the Beacon Group's Noon Steps Study Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Kyle and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting on a moment with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. All right, AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are fully self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and are looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. And if you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and have had a spiritual experience and are willing to sponsor, please put your name and number in chat as well. The chat will remain open during the meeting except while the speaker is sharing. If you're looking for a home group, we'd love to have you. Our business meetings for this noon meeting are held virtually on the third Monday of each month at 1 p.m. Eastern following our regular meeting. The Beacon Group's overall business meeting are both in person and on Zoom the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. To sign up for membership and to be on the email list, please visit our website, which is posted in the chat. Our website has a lot of great information as well as recordings of all these exceptional speakers from our meeting. Also in chat, you'll find the AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA conference approved literature. Our sponsor will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we automatically split into breakout rooms for small group discussion. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. This is also a time for questions, and questions are encouraged during the part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions will end at approximately 12:53, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Barbara to please read the 12 steps.
Good afternoon. I am Barbara. I am an alcoholic. These are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Barbara. Greatly appreciated. And now we will hear a talk on step 3 And once again, step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Would you please give a warm Beacon Group welcome to Mary M. from Los Angeles. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My name is Mary and I'm an alcoholic. Normally, I would be very prepared to do this. But this morning involved a disagreement with my daughter, lots of tears, apologies, amends, and surrender, because that's what this step is really about, surrender. You know, it's so interesting in this step. It says our philosophy of self-sufficiency wasn't paying off. And we know that. You know, it's funny. I'm a professor in real life, but I'm not going to profess today. I'm going to share my experience because I do enough professing. Trust me when I tell you this. But when I came to AA, I mean, I had no idea that this was, you know, coming here was actually the beginning of working step three. I didn't know that. I mean, I knew from my first meeting when someone said to me, would you like to have a cup of coffee? So if I'm going to tell you the wisdom of AA, I'm going to tell it to you in small sentences that transformed my life. So would you like to have a cup of coffee after the meeting? And I did. And at the cup of coffee, this woman told me, we don't drink, we don't keep alcohol, and we don't take any drugs. And I said, well, what do you mean by drugs? And she said, anything that's mind altering. And I said, well, you know, excuse me, all my drugs are prescribed drugs. I said, all my medications are prescribed by doctors. Except for the speed and the cocaine. I didn't do that. But anyway, this is the thing. When I came into AA, I had not been to a mental institution. So one of the things about coming in and hearing people talk about being in mental institutions made me think, oh, I don't belong. But I was here enough time to realize I'd been in the hospital so many times with my back, with bleeding ulcers, with pneumonia. All these things in my 20s. And no one ever said to me, you know, it's because of your drinking. They did say that a bleeding ulcer, you know, you probably shouldn't drink. What I thought they said was drink scotch with milk. That's what I thought they said. So I drank scotch and milk because I thought milk is good for a bleeding ulcer. But anyway, I didn't. Step three, you want me to turn over all my judgment to you? No, I mean, I wanted to say, I'm the West Coast editor of a major magazine in America. I'm not turning over. I mean, okay, you can tell me about drinking, but, you know, turn over everything to a God that told me I was a sinner. I cannot tell you how many times I went to confession. I know in Boston, there are a lot of Irish Catholics, but in St. Louis, there are a lot of Irish Catholics too. And you want me to turn my will and my life, all my decisions over to God? No. No, I mean, look, I'm married. I'm living with somebody else. And at my second meeting, I fell madly in love with a guy. So you want me to, you want to tell me that I shouldn't be dating Alan because I met him at my second meeting? Because I'm totally crazy, but I don't know it. But then she said, after the coffee, she said, well, you have to go home and you throw out all your alcohol and everything else. And I had 50 bottles of alcohol in my house for parties when people came over for dinner. And then I had all these pills and I wanted to say, well, you don't understand. I'm a writer, but I can't write without this. But of course, what did God do? He put next to me at my first meeting a writer who couldn't write without that until she got sober, and she was 3 years sober. And she said, you can do it, but you can just sit 15 minutes at a time. It's just see if you can sit still 15 minutes at a time. And so, so first, many working of step three. But through sentences, this is how I feel. I remember the other thing, one of the other big things about step three is I was always late for everything, always late. I mean, you know, I loved driving through Los Angeles. Like if the light turned red, turn green. I mean, you're just like, you're just on edge at all times, you know? And I was going to meet this old timer in AA for something. And his name is Clancy. He's deceased, and he never, not once had he ever yelled at me about anything. And then I got there late and I started crying and I said, I don't know how to be on time. And he said two words that changed my life: leave earlier. I mean, it was brilliant. Leave earlier for the airport. Leave earlier. I don't think I was interviewing this famous guy like Steven Spielberg. Leave earlier to interview Steven. Leave earlier. Don't rush out. Don't, where are my keys? Where's this? And we didn't even have cell phones then. So I wasn't like, I lost my cell phone. Leave earlier. Wow. Mini surrender that had maximum effect. Self-sufficiency. Our philosophy of self-sufficiency is not working. So, but still, you know, I had this wonderful sponsor. I loved her. My first sponsor was the person who sat next to me at my first meeting and is still my friend today. I should say that on Monday, July 4th, I turned 45 years sober, which when I came into AA, you would not have thought this woman can stay sober because I was very defiant. Now, so now I'm sober. I've written an inventory, you know. I've not taken step two because that has to admit that you're crazy. And I'm not crazy. I might have a good job. That's what I'm saying. I'm not crazy. Okay, you can take my alcohol, but then what happened to me, the things that the real surrenders, which is that what step three is about. I was 3.5 years sober until I really surrendered. If you're new, just keep here, keep, just stay here, stay. I wasn't sane, as I can tell you. I mean, you just hurt. My life was so crazy. And I moved into a house. I signed I bought the house. I didn't read what I signed. Don't ever do that. Anybody in AA, if there's anyone that can, if you're ever going to sign anything without reading it, call me. And what I didn't know is that 9 months after moving into the house, I owed a $90,000 wraparound loan. And I got a call from a lawyer saying, we're expecting the $90,000. Anyway, I put the phone in a drawer because honestly, I thought if I don't hear it ring, it's not real. I'm not answering this phone. And I had heard about, you know, step three, like Chuck C was this guy in AA, was always saying like, throw in the towel. So I would like take towels and throw them in the bathtub. Or it's like giving away a pair of old shoes, step three. So I would run out to the trash and put old shoes in before they came to collect the trash. But it wasn't, I didn't surrender. So here was what I did. This is how my real surrender, step three, began. I had to hire a lawyer and meet the guy who was foreclosing on my house. And When I was 3.5 years sober, I began dating the man who was foreclosing on my house. And I was so insane. And people in AA, all these wonderful people in AA kept saying, you know, Mary, this isn't a good idea. Mary, this isn't a good idea. But, you know, you can talk to me about alcohol, but step three is about turning it all over. And so, but I heard this guy Clancy, this is the first time I actually met him. I heard him speak at a meeting and he said, why don't you come down to the Midnight Mission and have a cup of coffee with me? The Midnight Mission in Los Angeles is on Skid Row. I'd never been to Skid Row. He wanted me to come to Skid Row and have a cup of coffee. So you can see the theme of coffee here, which I actually have never seen until this moment, the coffee theme. But so I went. I don't know why I went. I don't know why I went to the Midnight Mission. I don't know why I sat there. And I don't know why this man said what he did to me. But first he said, why is a woman who is as well-educated as you treating AA this way? I honestly didn't even know what he was talking about. I didn't understand that he was talking about the fact that I wouldn't listen to anybody, that I show up to meetings late, that I walked around during meetings, that I had, you know, so many boyfriends, that I had, you know, I wasn't paying attention. And I don't know. I honestly didn't know what to say to him. And then finally, he said, well, why were you crying at the meeting last night? And I said, well, because my boyfriend didn't call me this weekend. Oh, who's your boyfriend? I said, well, it's a little complicated because he's actually the man foreclosing on my house. So Clancy said, when are you going to see him again? And I, in my purse, I had these two tickets. I said, I'm taking him to see the play Evita tomorrow night. And this man who ran a mission on Skid Row said, let's take a walk. And we walked through, and he wrote a note and he said, let's walk. And we walked through Skid Row in Los Angeles. We walked past hundreds of people in boxes. Now they have tents, but they had boxes then, drinking wine and wine bottles everywhere. People sprawled on the streets. And he said to me, what I'm going to ask you to do is as difficult as asking these guys to stop drinking wine. And he handed me a note and it said, tear up the tickets to Evita and cancel out. Do you think that would be, that's not in the 12 and 12. That's not in the literature. I didn't study that when I underlined things. No, tear up the tickets to Evita and cancel out. And I did. I canceled out. And all these mini step threes. And then there it was. And there was the surrender. Let some sane voice in AA that was louder than mine tell me, give me, at least listen to the direction. And I did. And he didn't stop foreclosing. We did stop dating, but a banker in AA lent me $90,000. I don't even know how that happened. And I paid it off and then I went back, went to step studies all the time. And I realized, you know, I had not worked step three. I mean, I had pretended, because step three is action. It's not sitting in a room listening. It's not just reading the 12 and 12 or the big book. It is taking action. Action to surrender your whole life. I thought about this so much. I really want to thank you for asking me to talk about this today, because then I, you know, you have to reread it. And then I was thinking about this morning when I was having this disagreement with my daughter, who I love so much, who is 4 months pregnant and who's so scared to get COVID. And I thought, oh yeah, that's right. I don't have to handle this. God's handling this. I'm not putting the words in my mouth. God is. And so step three became something that to me came in sentences, not just from the 12 and 12 in the big book, but from what people said to me. I remember I broke my foot and I was on crutches and I was very depressed. Well, I was depressed, but I broke my foot when I was working. So the company I was working for gave me a limousine to drive me for 4 weeks back and forth from work. I also drove my carpool in the limousine, but I was very, very depressed. And I went to a meeting one night and I was sitting next to this other old timer, this guy, Johnny Harris. And I told him how depressed I was and my foot and the crutches. And I said, what do you think I should do? And he said, go to 30 meetings in 30 days. I thought, what? That's your solution? That's what you think will help me? I was maybe, I don't know, 7, 8 years sober. You think going to 30, but I did it. I went to 30 meetings in 30 days and it helped. Because when I was really, really new, like at one of my earliest meetings, I remember this guy saying, and every time I wrote anything from that point to this point, I write at the top of the page, of myself, I am nothing, the Father doeth the work. Another just really mini surrender. Of myself, I am nothing, the Father doeth the work. A couple of times, by the way, I forgot to take that, you know, off the top of a story I would turn into some magazine in New York and they'd be like, what is this? I'd say, well, my father, I don't know what I said, but I said, ignore it, you know. Of myself, I am nothing. The Father doeth the work. These are the things, these things. I mean, I read the step. I understand willingness, willingness. Sometimes my sponsor would say to me, Mary, be willing to be willing. You know, these simple things. I think sometimes now in AA, we forget. I mean, AA today. I mean, I go to meetings all the time. I was just a secretary of my home group, the Pacific group. I mean, I sponsor people. But I think sometimes we forget that the simplicity, like when I was getting sober, trying to get sober, I would tell this physical therapist I'd just gotten out of the hospital with a bad back or surgery. And I'd say, you know, I don't know if I'm an alcoholic, but I know that I can, I don't know. I leave my house and then I can never remember anything that happens during the night, you know, and do you think I'm an alcoholic? And all he would say is maybe. I mean, he lectured me, didn't put me in a room, you know, said, read the concepts. No, he said, maybe. And then a couple months later, I went to the Oscars and I ended up in the bushes outside the Oscars with two men. And I told him, and I said, do you think I might be an alcoholic? And he said, you know, I think you might be. He elongated the sentence. But these things, plus, I mean, if you're new or you're old, we work the steps. It's not that we do the steps when we're new. We do the steps all the time. We work the steps all the time. We uncover, discover, and discard all the time because it frees us. It's freed me of the bondage of self. It has freed me of the bondage of self to surrender. But I didn't know that. I mean, when these old timers talked about it, I didn't know. I don't understand the timing situation here. Can someone just explain to me? It says, I don't know how much time I have left.
13 minutes, Mary.
13 minutes? Oh, okay. Oh, 13 minutes? All right. So I guess I better tell my story. So anyway, oh Lord. Okay. I mean, I really am. I promise you, normally I'm very calm, but this morning was a very emotional morning. So I'm just giving you me at 45 years, me who sponsors people everywhere, me, who goes to meetings all the time. I'm totally involved. I'm more involved at 45 years than I was when I was new. I grew up in St. Louis. I have a great affinity for Boston, though, because all my college roommates were from Boston. And, but anyway, grew up in St. Louis. I'm an Irish Catholic. My mother's one of 15. My father is one of 11. So there was, it was in the family, there was like a divide. My mother and all her sisters cooked and cleaned and did everything. My father and all his brothers and sisters sang, tap danced, just had so much fun. They were. Always remember my Aunt Loretta. She never said a word. She was drunk all the time. But somewhere in the middle of every party, she would get taps out of her purse in a little plastic bag and like time and get up and wildly tap dance around at the party and then sit back down and, you know, pass out. And my mother said, never be like the Bagleys. That was their name. Never be like the Bagleys. That, and I didn't know what she meant. I thought she meant don't have fun. I wasn't sure what she meant. But what she meant, and as I said, my mother is one of 15. Many of them were women. And what they meant, which almost kept me out of AA, was you are our achiever. You are going to be the one that gets us, that gets out of this, meaning this Irish Catholic neighborhood in the middle of St. Louis, Missouri, where even Italians were suspect. Let's just say that. I mean, it was, you know, like all the Midwestern cities, just divided by neighborhoods. And so I did get out. I got out because my father decided he would work two jobs to send me to good schools. So he did. And the job he worked at night, I never would tell anybody about it. Couldn't tell anybody. Couldn't say. I was so embarrassed. My father works at night as a singing bartender. No, I can't say that to these rich girls at these rich schools. No, to these rich boys who come to pick me up to take me on dates. Oh, where's your dad? Oh, he's at a business meeting. He's at a business meeting. No, he's singing. He's singing these beautiful songs. People love him. He's singing these songs and I'm so ashamed. I am ashamed, but I'm not too ashamed not to go to these schools. And I go to these schools and I get wonderful education and I don't drink until my senior year in high school. I know that's really old for a lot of newcomers in AA, but I don't drink. And I drink because the nuns didn't like my dress at my senior prom. And I was defiant. One of the boys said, here, come to the back of the school. Here's a bourbon and Coke. It was my first drink. I don't know if Boston people even drink bourbon and Coke. They do in the Midwest, bourbon and Coke. I once went to Kentucky, to the Kentucky Derby and stayed at the house, like it was Tara, of the family that created or that made the family that owned all these bourbon factories. And I wanted to say, well, thank you for getting me drunk 1,000 times. But anyway, bourbon and Coke, bourbon and Coke, bourbon and Coke, senior prom, you know, student leader, drunk out of my mind, prom dress, did cartwheels in front of the nuns. Like, I don't care what you think anymore. Oh, wait, someone's at my door. Just a minute. Hold on. I'm so sorry. Wait just a second. I don't know. Meg? Oh, Lord, hold on. Yeah. Oh, sir, I can't talk now. Oh, wait, do you need a key to get in? Okay, hold on. Okay, and I really want you to check for mice. We're having mice problems.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm giving a speech until 10, but just knock on the door.
Okay, right.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. I'm so sorry. This is step three at work. First of all, you got to see that I had jeans on. I'm so sorry. I don't know my skirts. Anyway, it was a Terminix man. He needed to get in. So God has just decided that today, all of you, you're just going to see, you know, the real me, real life. Because that's what worked for me, by the way. What worked for me was listening when I was new. Well, I'll go back to my drinking, but what worked for me when I was new was listening to people tell the truth. You know, I didn't, not lecturing to me, telling me, how do you do this? How are you a mother? I wasn't a mother. I mean, how do you get married? Then I got married. Then how do you have children and be a mother and do a carpool? How do you do these things? How do you work and stay sober? You know, all these things that helped me so much. But anyway, when I was first drinking, all I knew is, you know, you just take some drinks and you do cartwheels. And that's it. That's just. And then I went to college in New York, first girl in my family to ever go to college. And I took the train, of course, because my father worked for the railroad. And 135 people came to the train station to say goodbye to me. Big deal, big, you know, big Irish Catholic family going to New York, going to college. And then the train pulled out and then they were all gone. I don't know what to do. I don't, how do I do this without you? So yeah, that's what you do. You go to New York, the drinking age is 18. I'm 18. You start to get drunk. You just get drunk. And then I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't think straight. And I felt like I was getting fat. I weighed about 110 pounds. And I went to my family doctor and he said, here, these pills, they'll help you. Oh. Well, what they did help is if you took one, you could stay awake for 17 days straight in a row. That's what they were grateful. But all that stuff, all that, the achievements, I got kicked out of that college. And you know what my mother said? Never tell anybody in the family. So I wrote a letter to the nuns and they let me back in and I graduated. But the alcoholism in these families that I grew up in, never talk about it. You never say a word. The only thing my mother said was, don't be like the Begleys. Don't be like, they never said, where's Aunt Marie? What happened to her? Oh, she's somewhere. Where's Rita, my cousin? Where's Rita, my cousin who I love so much? They didn't tell me she was smoking one night drunk and burned her apartment, burned her babies to death. No. You never talk about it. No, we never saw her again. That is the family I came from into Alcoholics Anonymous, the family I love. They are so loving. I love my family. But you just don't talk about it. You do not talk and you don't talk about drinking. I mean, you don't. And so I, you know, ended up graduating from that school and came back to St. Louis and couldn't type. I typed 17 words a minute, so I couldn't get a bad job, just so you know. And I got hired as a reporter at my hometown newspaper, Pulitzer Prize winning newspaper, because the editor said, I don't care if you can type, you can think. And the great thing about newspapers then, and maybe now, but everyone's so PC, is that there was a bar across the street from every newspaper. Every newspaper. I mean, you know, the typo bar across from the, in St. Louis, the Redwood in Los Angeles. And alcoholism, my willfulness took me to Los Angeles because I met a man who I barely knew and he asked me to marry him and his name is Murphy. And I moved to Los Angeles and left everything behind in my alcoholism and came here in the Redwood and worked at a great newspaper here and just absolutely was just a drunken, you know, I can't believe it. I lost all my morals. I lost all the virtues. I lost everything. And then I went to the Oscars and fell in the bushes. And the man who was trying to help me said, yeah, maybe you are an alcoholic. And why don't you go to AA? He said, meet me at my house. He drove his car. I drove mine. He didn't even walk me in. I walked into AA on my own. Now I realize all these years later, all these people I've tried to 12 step, you have to come in on your own. It's the longest walk in the world. I once went on a 12 step call, knocked on the door, and like 10 guys opened the door. And I said, is Susie here? Because she'd called central office. They said, no, she's not. And I said, well, she called. I was so scared. She called. And I looked past the guys. I looked in past the living room to the bedroom, and under the bed, there was a woman laying there like this, looking out. And she never came out. And that's when I realized the longest walk in the world is to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and then to surrender, then to work step three, then to turn everything over to a God you don't even. Somebody said to me, I said, God. And they said, yeah, you park God like an old car on the edge of the freeway. You just parked him and left him there. And I had to find this God here. And I had to work step three. I had to surrender everything in my life. So what happened is then God decided, you know, doctors said, you'll never have a child. And God decided I should marry a man who had a little boy whose mother had left. And I did. And then I got pregnant and I had Megan. I mean, God makes these decisions. We, every day, like last night, I was reading step three and I thought, oh my gosh, there are all these things I need to get done in my life this summer before school starts. And I think I have to do them on my own. No, God, I forgot. You're here. You're going to do them. You're going to tell me. You're going to help me. How am I going to get the foundation rebuilt? The last bid I got was $130,000 to rebuild the foundation in my house. Okay, God. Can you possibly give me that $130,000 now? Well, I got $135,000 this week, so that's good. $135, though. $135,000. How does God work? How do I do step three? By showing up here today, really. By saying yes. That's how we do it. We do it by saying yes and taking an action. And that is what I did this morning. And whether any of you know it or not, you saved me today. You saved me by asking me to do this. And then God just put the word yes in my mouth. So I'm very grateful. I can't wait to get to Boston again sometime. I love Boston. I love Boston. One of my first dates, I think, in college was from Harvard. And I was like, Harvard? You know, I'm from St. Louis. And then he said he went to Choate. I said, what's Choate? And he never spoke to me after that because I didn't know what some, you know, fancy, you know, school was in the East Coast. But guess what? It doesn't matter. I know all those things now. I've traveled the world drunk and I've traveled the world sober. And I'll tell you, sober's better. So thank you.